Welcome to the Veteran Experience with author, veteran, and judge Mark Johnson. On this show, we create a place for veterans to heal and be heard. We tell stories of struggle, of heroism, of the endless battle to preserve American liberty, and we discuss the toll this takes on our best and brightest. Now, today we're going to have an Army soldier. His name's Paul Angulo. Now, Paul served from, I'll get the exact dates, 1970 to 74. He served in Frankfurt, Germany. I was over there myself about 7-8 years later. Paul has risen to be the auditor controller of Riverside County. He's got a huge budget, and this was after years where he spent as a CPA in private practice. I think he's really inspirational because one thing I see on Facebook is he is always attributing a great deal of his success to his time in the Army and the leadership skills he learned while wearing a uniform. And that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk with him as to what he did learn and how that helped him later in life. So, tell you what, let's get Paul on the line. Here we go.
Good morning, sir.
Hey, Paul. Hey, good to see you, brother. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Thank you. I've got some new technology here, so I think I'm okay. It's a new phone, and, you know, I don't have a 10-year-old here that can figure it out.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was just about ready to say on my podcast, I do a little introduction. I was just about ready to say that whenever I use this fancy equipment, I think I'm dating myself, but I always have this sneaking suspicion that it's not going to work. And I don't think young people go through that. I don't think the 20-year-olds have that fear.
They don't go through that. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Well, Paul, welcome to the Veteran Experience. Hey, I really appreciate your brother coming on and talking. And I guess,
my pleasure.
You know, I wanted to talk to you, and I know you're a man who's risen to a great deal of success, and you deal with a lot of money. And I guess, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk was how you feel the service had helped you. But, okay, let's start. You're the auditor controller of Riverside County. What is that job exactly?
Well, it's a very important job that provides oversight of the taxpayer money. Basically we're the guard on the job, and we, by providing oversight, we make ensure that there's transparency, that the public can see where their money is going. This is a very critical job. Sometimes people say, well, why isn't it appointed? Well, if it's appointed, then you have no independence. You can't really speak up. So it's an elected job. In most of the United States. And that's what makes the United States, in my humble opinion, a very powerful economic force. The heavy lifting of government is done at the county level. That's where the money goes. Coming from Sacramento here in California, or coming from the federal government, the vast majority goes to the counties for the hospitals, for law enforcement, courts, and things like that. I have a staff of 100, roughly about 100 accountants, professional accountants.
Okay.
And we're monitoring millions and millions of transactions. It is a very challenging job. But we also pay the county auditor. We not only do the audits for the county, but we also pay all the county's bills. We do the computations for the debt. The bonds that the county borrows money on. We do financial reports, and we've gotten a lot of national awards for the quality of our reports. So that's basically in a nutshell what we do. There's I think people need to know also there's a tremendous amount of risk involved here, that something can go wrong. Yeah. You know that old adage that if something can go wrong, it will go wrong?
Yes.
Well, that's exactly what I'm always on guard with. You know, and of course, I started my whole professional career as an 18-year-old in the United States Army.
Okay,
I really took it to heart when they said, be on guard. Be on guard.
Hey, let me
ask
before I get to that, let me ask, how big is your budget? I mean, how much money are we talking about? Because Riverside County, I think it's fair to say it's got about 3 million people, and it spreads all the way from Pomona, just about, Chino, all the way out to the Arizona border. Arizona. It's huge. Yeah.
It is. And we're actually, as the crow flies, we're only about 15 miles from the ocean. There's the mountains that block us, and then there's Orange County, but we're not even far from the ocean. Riverside County, there's what I call three-dimensional finance going on. That's my term. The county has a budget exceeding $7 billion, which is larger than about 25 states. Wow. In the United States of America. If we combine it with our neighbor, our county neighbor to the north, or our neighbor to the south, we are large as an economic zone. We're larger than 35 states. This is real, real business here.
Yes.
So in this economic zone, I mean, when I did the computation, I said, you got to be kidding me, larger than 35 states? That's huge. Yeah. So what is really important and critical is that we have people that are highly skilled. We must have that. But that's also what a lot of people don't know, is that we not only monitor and I provide guidance and direction on the budget, but the county has more than $38 billion. It's more of cash flows and assets. So my office not only monitors the budget, we also monitor all the other financial pieces, such as the bank account. Mm-hmm. The bank account has $7 billion in it. The buildings that we own just many, many high-rises and other buildings. Our fleet, our car fleet, the hospital. The co-gen generator at the hospital, we own $38 billion. That is like a major corporation. That's how big we are.
So tremendous. You're dealing with tremendous responsibility, obviously.
Absolutely.
With not a lot of room for error either, I would imagine.
No, absolutely not. We have to have firewalls up because everything is done on the internet.
Oh, Lord.
And it's all high tech.
Yeah.
So we have to have firewalls up, and there's people that are dedicated. There's nations like Russia that is dedicated to breaking through these firewalls. So I'm constantly, I've had two state senators say, Paul, why do you do this kind of work? It's high risk. It's very high risk. I said, well, that's what I do. And as a former soldier, you know, yeah. I've got that training in me. That if it's challenging, I'm still going to go forward. I'm still going to move forward.
Well,
that's
Paul,
how I was trained.
Everybody, I know we're Facebook friends, and I've seen pictures of you, and I must say, from 70 to 74, I don't think you've aged a day. I think I've got it right. 1970 to 74, you served in the Army.
I was it was 1971 when
okay.
I enlisted. I was 18. Yeah, it was 71, and then I enlisted in a delay program, so I enlisted in the summer, and I went active that December of 71.
Okay, and where were you living then?
I was living not far from the Inland Empire. I was living in a place called Hacienda Heights, California.
So you're pretty much a local boy, it sounds like.
Yes. I've been around in the Inland Empire, Riverside, since I was a young teenager. For example, driving down to San Diego, this was the scenic route, or we went the coastal route. So I've been through here when it was nothing but orchards. I've been through here where there was no freeways.
Right.
If you were to drive from Riverside to San Diego, there was a 2-lane highway and there were stop signs all the way down, and there was fruit stands. I remember those vividly.
Yeah, I 395. Is that it? I think the 395, is that the road that used to go down?
Old
215?
The 215, yes.
Okay. Now that's a freeway now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Paul, what possessed you to enlist in the United States Army?
My dad was a fervent believer in America, in the United States of America. So was my mother. And so as a child, I was raised with a very strong admiration and respect for the United States of America. You know, what a lot of people don't know is that, I grew up in San Francisco. And they think that there's just a lot of hippies and liberals, and it's not true. There's a lot of great Americans in that progressive city.
So true. I agree.
And here's to back that up. I remember vividly as a child in elementary school, almost every day singing God Bless America or America the Beautiful. I go, oh my God. You know, I was being educated about America. These were not, you know, just crazy liberals. These were real Americans.
Yeah.
And so that was at my core as a child. And then I grew up in that environment, very pro-American. And then my dad was very pro-American. Unbelievably so, because when I got to high school, you know how rebellious kids are in high school. And they say, hey, dad, you know, they don't treat minorities very well in the United States. And he goes, what do you mean? And I said, well, you know, people of color, they don't treat them very good. He goes, Paul, I don't understand that. He says, in America, you work, you make money. That's it. There was no fractionalizing on the part of my father. You know, he came here from Costa Rica at the end of the Second World War when the United States needed a lot of manpower. And he just believed in America that if you came and you worked, like many immigrants do, if you came and you work hard, you will succeed.
I would certainly like to get that attitude out to more people. I think, Paul, we probably agree. There's a lot of things to work on. America's not perfect.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I hear nowadays it seems like we're always telling kids, sorry, you can't make it for this reason. And then if they believe you. They don't make it. And I'd like right. I like what your dad did. He's obviously a man who believes in America.
Well, you know, I followed my father's suggestion, and even coming from humble beginnings, I joined the Army. It was the best decision I could have made as a young man living in a city at that time. Well, Hacienda Heights wasn't that bad, but there was a lot of drugs.
Okay.
And by joining the Army, bless their heart, it took removed me from all of that. Thank the Lord.
Well, no, you know, and I've seen that. I've seen a lot of kids. God, I used to, as I was a criminal defense attorney, I would represent a lot of young guys, and all I wanted to do was draft them into the Army, get them out of their neighborhood at those critical ages from about 18 to 21.
Right.
Okay, so I saw you served in Germany. That must have been a big shift for a young guy from Hacienda Heights.
Yes, you know, I just turned 19, and I wasn't sure if I was going to go to Vietnam because it was the tail end of the Vietnam. The United States was in a drawdown situation, but they were still sending troops.
Yes.
And again, once again, I was blessed to be in a combat unit, even though I was not in a combat situation. But my unit, numerous guys had earned Silver Stars. I mean, these were the greatest of great Americans that I served with in my unit. And they were my supervisors, my sergeants. And, you know, I mean, what a fantastic opportunity I had as a young man. And so I was with them. Some of them were special forces. Actually, many of them were Green Beret special forces, the unit that I was in. And I said, well, wait a minute. You know, I'm just a regular engineer. And they said, well, you're going to be an OJT guy. On the job training. Right. I said, oh, that sounds great, you know. And one morning, the sergeant came on. He goes, we need three people to go to a flight to Frankfurt on Monday. And Gulo, you can volunteer. And he picked up two other guys.
That kind of volunteering. Yes.
Yeah. So I was in Alabama at Fort Rucker where they train helicopter pilots. I was stationed there for a short while. And then I went to Frankfurt. I didn't realize that the base that I was going to be put on had just been bombed several times and had people killed by terrorists. This is when the terrorism thing was really the Red Brigade.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And there was a colonel that was killed. There was a colonel that was killed and then some specialists like myself were murdered. And so I was at that base, but, you know, because I had Army training, I wasn't like overly concerned. It was like, okay, well, this is what I signed up for. And so I was there at that time. And then a year later, the Yom Kippur War broke out, and we got volunteered to go to the Middle East on that. And so we got ready, and we did not ship out because the president said, we're going to just put you guys on hold.
Okay.
So we're ready to ship out to the Middle East. And, you know, it was incredible events, you know, just yes. One thing after the next.
What was your MOS?
I was an engineer. I was a construction engineer. I'd hoped to go into civil engineering at the time. I said, well, this is a good place to learn how to do that kind of work. So what I did was I designed bunkers, I designed roads, we designed culverts, and the officers let me do a lot of work because I was very passionate about what I was doing. They said, well, why don't you go ahead and do that blueprint and bring it over to the colonel? And so I've got a lot of experience doing that.
That's cool. So what do you think you took away from the Army? Because I know from what I see that you're really proud of your military service. And what do you think, like, life principles you took away?
Not to hold the line, to go ahead and take on challenges that's what the Army taught me. One of the things that you can do more than you think you can do.
I agree 100%. Yes.
Yeah. Like running for county auditor, everybody said that is impossible. You will never succeed. Okay. You're talking to a soldier here. I don't have that in my language.
Well, you know, that's what the beauty of the military, it's like when you were describing how you got shipped out to Frankfurt and they don't ask you stuff. They just assume you can do it. And there isn't some big, like, touchy-feely session. They just say, hey, you're a soldier, you're doing it. And you do. I sometimes think we don't expect enough of young people nowadays. I don't. Maybe I'm dating myself at 64, but sometimes I feel like we just don't expect enough of young people, and we listen to
excuses.
Well,
I think you're correct. And what I've tried to do is change that paradigm. In my office, instead of asking the board for more money for more employees, I've asked my folks to step up to the plate. Mm-hmm. And instead of having nice portraits up on the conference room, I have the United States of America flag.
I remember I swore you in. That was actually a very proud moment for me. I swore. I'll say Paul asked me to do him the honor of swearing him in for this term, and I showed up over there and swore you in. Yeah, that was a really great day.
Thank you. And so I tell them, this is who you're serving. You're serving the American people. You're serving the community and the American people. My Lord, you know, let's step it up here. We can do this. And you know what? They have rallied. Mm-hmm. They have rallied. And the proof of the pudding was during COVID, they were ill. And instead of calling off or calling FEMLA, you know, and being able to leave for a few months, they all continue to work from home, even though they were ill. Wow. That was just amazing.
Yeah.
We still hit all our deadlines that we needed to hit. And so what I've learned is but you got to model the leadership. And that's what I learned in the military. You got to model the leadership. You got to be first there.
Yeah.
And then they'll follow.
Yeah.
And you participate with them. Yeah. One of the things that I'm reading right now, I'm studying Julius Caesar and I'm studying Napoleon as well. Both of them engaged the soldiers and they did phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Actions. And so I've learned from that, and I learned from my experience in the military. You know, we can step it up. We can do this.
Yeah, COVID must have been a really challenging time for you.
Well, it was because one of our chores is to distribute nearly $5 billion to schools and cities.
Okay.
Those monies, those billions, go to pay payroll. I mean, Like, wow. Yeah. So they have to have their money when they need their money. I can't say, sorry, our team's uphill.
Yeah,
not possible. Oh, the other thing that we pay, and it gets a little technical, and I don't really want to go there, but we pay their debt, which is in the multi-billions. We pay that from my office. We do all the calculation for the school debt. I mean, that has to be paid, because if it's not paid, and then the county rating goes down, and therefore the interest rates for the county goes up. We don't want to go there. And still, the team continued to fight on. I was so proud of them. And not to pat myself on the back, because I just, you know, but I'm a transparent guy. I was in the hospital with that disease for three and a half weeks.
Hey, Yeah, I was worried because, yes, I remember that. And I think you weren't you in intensive care?
I was 3 weeks
prayers.
In intensive care. I came as close to death as I ever. The metrics was horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, I went in there. My oxygenation was in the 70s. I mean, I was day. I had to get in there. And as the Lord is my witness, I continued to work from there to the extent that I could until I could no longer work, because I was hooked up to machinery. It was very loud in the room. So I ordered a headset because I was still giving guidance and direction in that room.
I remember you giving
no
updates.
Longer,
yeah, I remember you. I remember you giving updates. I thought that
was
a Herculean effort there. It's like, because, yeah, I was worried. As a friend, I was worried that you – I was worried you were going to die, and I was
because, you know, being in my late 60s, it hits older people pretty bad. And some folks have asked me, well, why did you get it so bad, Paul? Well, others got killed. Others died.
Yeah.
So I survived it. But if I had an answer to that, I'd be sitting next to Dr. Fauci on TV. I don't know why I got it. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd never been in the hospital.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about, you leave the Army, you've learned some valuable lessons, and then I know you were a CPA, and I'm wondering what, you could have been sitting in a nice little cush office doing, you know, tax returns and handling the books for businesses, but I'm trying to figure out why you wanted to take on the massive headache of the job you're in now.
Right. Well, that's a really good question. But you see, Judge Mark, I'm a believer. I'm a true believer in America.
Yeah.
Okay.
Me too.
And so I will take on any fight. I've been threatened. I've been personally threatened. My family's been threatened. I've been sued. And I said, I'm going to fight for the taxpayer just like I did when I was a young man.
Mm-hmm.
I won't back off. And I do not compromise those values. I do not take dirty money. No conflict of interest. That's not what I do. Okay. I am straight. Okay. But what allowed me to do this is a combination of factors. One, that I served with some very great men and women in the military,
mm-hmm.
great men and women. Okay. And so I learned from them. From there, I went to UC Berkeley. With just a few hundred dollars in my pocket. It didn't matter. I was a soldier. I was going to succeed. And I showed up personally to UC Berkeley, one of the most famous and challenging public universities in the world.
It is.
And they said, you want to come here to Berkeley? And they said, you know, so they asked, well, do you have any leadership experience? And I said, does the United States Army count? And they said, oh, you're a veteran. I said, absolutely. and they said, yep, you know, you have a lot of leadership experience. You have been accepted. Mm-hmm. That was another life-changing event. So one of them, the military, helped me to become stronger, tougher. And then I went and reached higher at the university. And so with both of those combined, I learned that if I wanted to succeed, I had a double down and triple down. It was not going to be given to me. I'm going to have to fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how, when I ran for county auditor and people said, this is impossible. Mm-hmm. You do not have the money. You do not have all the endorsements, because I am a proud soldier. Mm-hmm. I do not go around kissing the rings of the swamp.
That's
okay. Okay, I do not kiss their ring.
Yeah.
So the swamp does not like me. I will never kiss the ring. I'm a proud American soldier. But I work my tail off for the people. That's why I have won in landslides. Because the people get it.
Yeah. Well, obviously, now, as a judge, I can't take any position on the election, and I'm not. I really wanted to, like, and you're telling me what I knew, I think, that the Army gave you those leadership skills that have helped you through your life.
You know what I tell my team sometimes is, we need to step it up. Mm-hmm. And then I remind them, I'm not asking you to jump out of an airplane, okay? I'm not asking you that. I'm not asking you to take the hill. I'm not asking you a whole lot of stuff that other young military folk get asked to do, okay? I'm just asking you to make sure that Excel spreadsheet is right on, mm-hmm. and that we hit our deadlines. That's all I'm asking. Now, you should be able, we all should be able to do that. But, you know, I've leveraged one thing after the next to get this incredible success story that I have achieved. Mm-hmm. I have broken through so many barriers. I mean, I was gone in the Army for almost 4 years before I went to college. That's a long layoff.
Yes.
But I came back, and because what I had learned and been taught by these great people was, you know, really hang in there. That's not going to be easy. And so I give them a huge amount of credit for who I am today. And I have a tremendous pride to be able to say that my entire adult life, I've been a United States Army veteran, my entire adult life.
Yeah.
That is, I'm very proud of that. Yeah. My dad was very proud of that. My family, we're all proud. And we're a military family.
Now, I noticed another thing, you don't seem to sit still much. I know you were back at Harvard at their School of Government.
Yes.
I mean, that's world class. And what tell me about that.
Okay. I not only went to JFK Graduate School for Government, I also attended the Harvard Law School there. Conflict resolution and advanced negotiation program.
Oh, that's...
That was tough.
I bet.
Real tough. Okay. My leadership style is to keep pedal to the metal learning all the time. This is my leadership style. I believe that a leader has to have as much training and education that they can have, because we're in the military, we're leading troops. Their lives count on us. We better know what the hell we're doing. Mm-hmm. In the government, I'm looking after the people's billions of dollars. I want to make sure this is, you know, precise, and that the people have everything due to them. Government is very complicated. There's a lot of power centers. If you don't know how to negotiate, mm-hmm. good luck. Good luck with that. And so what I did basically at Harvard was, it was almost like going to a gym, but it was intellectual exercise, workout. It's not just at Harvard. It's not just sitting there and listening to a lecture. No. You have to actually participate.
Yeah,
you got to do a lot of projects. You have to do presentations yourself. And so the way I got into Harvard was, it's a very tough way to get, it's not easy to get in there for these programs. And they said, well, what kind of leadership? Because they're big on leadership too, believe it or not. And so, what kind of leadership experience do you have? And I said, well, I'm the county controller in one of the largest counties in the United States. Oh, yeah. And then I told them about, what I had done. And then I was allowed to participate in these advanced technical training programs.
Yeah.
And that made me stronger to represent Riverside County taxpayer. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, do you want to fly in a commercial jet that the guy just barely, all he ever flew was Cessnas or you want to fly, or you want your pilot to be a Navy F-18 fighter pilot. You know, I know what I want. You know, I want that guy that's really trained. That's my leadership style, and that's what I do. I'm pedal to the metal. I've been doing it on my own. The grand jury keeps asking me, well, who paid for your college degree at Berkeley? Well, you didn't. I did. You know, I mean, they just can't believe it. They can't get, you know, they can't, it's, they get beside themselves. It's a very, you know, very famous university. And they look at me and they said, but how did you do that? Well, I worked at night. You know, I found a solution. Isn't that what we do in America?
Yeah.
You know, we get innovative and we find solutions. The day I graduated from Berkeley, I didn't owe them one dime, not a nickel. I paid for it cash by working graveyard. That's what I did.
That's cool. You know, I noticed also, you always seem like you're taking some exotic vacation to places few people dream about, like you're up way up the Amazon River or something. Yeah.
Well, you know, I love being up in the mountains too.
Yeah, me too.
But one thing for sure, I'll never climb Mount Everest. But guess what? I floated down the Amazon River in the heart of the Amazon. How many people have done that? Not, I don't know anybody has done it besides me, because you got to learn to work with the Indians, the natives, the indigenous. You have to learn the language, Portuguese, or wing it.
Yeah.
You got to get there to start with. And it's a very dangerous environment. There's a lot of criminals in the outer part of the Amazon. The cartel is there. That's where they transport narcotics. But I went to the Amazon, and I was in a little dinghy going down river in the heart of the Amazon. And I had my binoculars, and I was scouting where to land. And you're not going to believe this. There was a company of Brazilian Green Beret soldiers training. Yeah. That's where I was. I said, oh, my God, these soldiers are training in the jungle that I'm just hanging out in, having some fun, you know. But I learned that from the Army. That's an Army thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was trained to do that kind of stuff in the military. So I just embrace it. I love it. I love the challenge. And I love learning. I love foreign cultures. And I think this gets through to a lot of folks, and that's why they vote for me, because I'm really a diversified, I love diversification. I just love people from all walks of life. And I always ask questions, where are you from? Can you tell me a little bit about yourself? I'm always fascinated with that.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. There's nothing more fun than travel, I think. Well, Paul, you know, you kind of exemplify a lot of things I think about our veterans. I happen to think veterans are a cut above the rest of the world. I'm a little biased because I happen to be one of them, but I think, you know, if it was up to me, I would reinstate the draft. Let me say this. I would not force anybody to be in a combat role or kill people.
Right.
I wouldn't do that, but you could do some public service instead. But, you know, the draft used to mix kids up of all races, all neighborhoods. And I think it was a very good thing. We seem to be getting so, like, split apart nowadays. And the draft basically threw the black kid from the inner city with the white kid from West Virginia with the Latino guy from East LA and said, okay, you know, you have to work together.
Yep.
And I think it was a good thing. I think it helped a lot of issues. And sometimes I feel a lot of them are we're going back the other way now. We're polarized. We're dividing into groups and tribes. And I think it's bad. I think the military is really good for kids. So that's my little speech.
Well, I think it's important what you said, because in my platoon, there was two guys that were actually rich. Their parents were rich.
Mm-hmm.
I would have never met anybody that was rich from my community, okay? And we had to work together. In the military, as you know, they're colorblind.
Yes.
They just say, you, and you, get this job done. That's how they do it. So you learn to work with African-Americans, rich people, poor people, inner city, farmers, guys from the farm.
Yeah.
But most importantly about the draft, most importantly, I think, my brother was on his third combat trip to Iraq. And he says, oh, I you know, I'm going to go back to Iraq, and then I'm going to go back again. I said, hold on a second, Doug. I said, democracy and the freedoms we enjoy are a shared responsibility.
Yes.
It cannot be the Angulo family going back over and over and over. I have friends that have been to the Middle East in combat roles, 12 tours.
I know. That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
And then we wonder why they have PTSD.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the strongest man, even in Caesar's army and in Napoleon's armies, these guys had PTSD from so much combat.
Oh, there's an ancient Greek play of it. The name escapes me, but it's about a soldier with PTSD, and I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. But yeah, these are not new problems. These are things that have been around forever. I mean, and I agree with you. We sit there, we've got people, even in reserve units, we have people in the Army Reserve and in the Guard who've done 4 or 5 tours.
Wow.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And it takes a toll.
I know that when I was in the Army and you see how many combat tours, you know, the stripes on their sleeve.
Yeah.
And I see these guys, I can't even count them. I said, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. That's years in combat zone. Years. I said, oh, you know, thank you for your service. I just can't believe it, because I know that the 3 years that I served active, that was a long time for me. You know, I was 19, 20, 21. So that was a big chunk of my young life. Now, looking back, I see things a little differently.
Yeah. Paul, any, like, for young kids, let's say, military service, any message you have or anything that you really believe in you'd like to get out there?
Well, I believe that we're part of one of the greatest nations ever in the world. And we have to fight for our democratic freedoms. A lot of people don't understand that there's hundreds of nations in the world, but only a small handful are democratic and have those freedoms. We have to preserve that if we want to be a free people.
Yes.
So I encourage people to participate. The military isn't for everybody, but can you help out in a different way, in another way? To young people, I always say, use patience. Nothing valuable succeeds overnight. You got to just stick with it. And if you believe in yourself, you will succeed.
Hey, Paul, thank you very much, buddy, for coming on. I want to get a good message out there to help our veterans, actually to help all young people, and I think you just delivered it for me. So for people who are listening, thank you very much for listening. In the show notes, I'll put my email address. If you have any questions for the Auditor Controller of Riverside County about his service, if you got a gripe about a bill or something, you could take that through his office. But if you got a question or anything you want to talk to him about leadership, just get it to me. I will make sure I get it answered for you. But I want to thank everybody for listening. And Paul, thank you very much. Thanks for taking your time. I know you're an incredibly busy guy, so handing 40 minutes of your day on a work day was a big thing. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
All right. Hey, thank you, brother.
Thank you, sir.
All right, take care.
Thanks. Thank you, sir.